welcome along to a very special couple of podcasts. We're going to have one today, one tomorrow, for the ITV Cards at Newmarket and beyond as part of the July meeting. Myself, Patrick Connelly, I'm hosting this episode of the From the Horse's Mouth in the company of Rory DeLargy. Rory, a big thank you to Tom, who took over while I was on holidays. Tom Nugent, who he managed to keep yourself and Matt Chapman at bay. He did okay?
He did all right, yeah.
He did all right. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, I hope he's not.
Tom seemed to be very happy back in the old seat, but he also was at pains not to be seen to be taking over your chair there. So he was
he's
very diplomatic all round, really.
He's a very good, yeah. He's a very nice guy. Well, yeah, of course, he used to host the pod. He's moved on to greener pastures, and straight away I listened back and Matt Chapman was straight in and saying, you're fat, essentially. But anyway, that's typical. I was listening, Rory, at the weekend, just to go back to the weekend pod, and I kind of out for my walk after all the racing, and I was away, so I didn't follow the racing as heavily as normal. And I heard you go on about this Charlie Mark Johnson 40-1 poke, and I was like, geez, I seem to remember Charlie Mark Johnson had a 40-1 winner over the weekend. Must have a look. And you picked the other. That's the 40-1. He had a 40-1 winner in the race. He tipped his other 40-1 poke.
Such is life, really. Well, he finished second and
second.
But this is the thing. Mark Johnson's got all these horses who seem to lose their way a little bit and then suddenly bounce back. Usually around the July meeting time at Newmarket, you know, they seem to be really progressive. And then suddenly you get three or four duck eggs next to them. They're back below their last winning mark again. And then they progress again to do well in July and August, Newmarket and Goodwood, usually those meetings. So you've always got to keep an eye on the Johnson horses in races like that. But it wasn't to be, sadly, last week. But
He's got some big prices this week, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Right, before we get stuck into day one of the Newmarket July meeting, just a heads up, we want to give you a free bet. Tom's gone, I'm back. I'm dishing out free bets to get you back on my good side. 50 quid free bet is going to be an offer. All you have to do is quote tweet any tweet you see about the From the Horses Mouth podcast, put in the old hashtag FTHM, say something nice about us, and we'll give you, hopefully put you in the draw. We'll definitely put you in the draw, and hopefully you manage to bag a free bet from that. So that's a free bet competition, absolutely free to play. Best of luck with that. Okay, let's look ahead. Day one of Newmarket's July meeting. I don't know about you, Rory, this meeting tends to creep up on me every now and again, because it's not like it's in between Royal Ascot and obviously Goodwood and Galway. And it's just, for me anyway, it's kind of like, oh yeah, the July meeting. I don't, is it the same for you, or
it is a slightly sneaky one, isn't it? I like a lot of meetings, I enjoyed it a little bit more when it didn't encroach on the weekend. Yeah. And next Saturday is a really busy day, and in the good old days, the July meeting was one of those midweek only meetings where you had the benefit of a bit of TV racing during the week. So I remember as a kid enjoying that, having something to watch during the week rather than just the weekends. But now that it's kind of spilled over on the Saturday again, you know, we got that argument about overkill and too much racing in the wrong times.
Every year. I remember the John Smith's Cup would make the headline of the Racing Post on Saturday, and it would be the big story, be the John Smith's Cup about the big gambles, you know, and now you wouldn't even know.
That's July Cup Day, yeah.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't even know. Speaking racing and talking about kind of not less politics, or maybe it is politics, it was a very interesting weekend. Obviously, the stewards had their say in the Lancashire Oaks, and one of the most curious decisions of all time. We all watched the race. If you haven't watched it, Free Wind won the Lancashire Oaks. Watch it. I'm sure you can watch it and pop in Lancashire Oaks into Racing Post or into YouTube, and you'll see Free Wind got out of trouble and managed to win. Jim Crowley slammed the door shut. I'm going to use that phrase. And so we all thought, oh, grand, Jim's going to get a few days for that and move on. No. The stewards gave Rab Havlin a ban. But since it's been used, what was your initial thoughts on the decision, Rory?
We've seen some curious decisions, not just in terms of who's at fault in certain incidents, but the unwillingness, it seems, of the stewards to deal with intentional interference as something that is not just careless, but beyond that. There was a big debate about the Norfolk Stakes at Royal Ascot and whether Paul Hannigan rode dangerously there. I can't have champion jockeys carving other jockeys up and it just being careless, particularly when you can see those jockeys look over the shoulder and check where they are and then make a maneuver. So this is a particularly bizarre one, because Hannigan at Ascot was deemed not to have made a maneuver. His horse just hung left. So he hadn't planned to go that way. He just didn't correct the horse from doing what it was doing. I disagree with that, but this is a scenario where Jim Crowley knew that his main danger was on his inside, because he checked twice. And then, having left a gap for that horse, He closed the gap. Now, that's race riding in a lot of scenarios. If you close the door at the right point, and if you don't simply turn left into that horse who's coming up behind you. I thought Jim Musk calculated it quite badly. You know, if you're a jockey in that situation, you know that your main rival is trying to sneak up your inside. You want to stop him getting that run. You want to encourage him just enough that he starts to make a move and then make sure that he has to change his mind. You don't want to have contact there. You don't want to basically put him through the rails, which is almost what ended up happening. And of course, most people saw that the same way. They saw that as looking like Jim was trying to put Rab Haviland through the rails. And I think everyone was pretty much astounded when the stewards banned Rab Haviland for going for a gap that didn't exist, because from the TV pictures, the gap seemed to exist for quite a while. And the intention was for the gap to exist, and Rab didn't go for the gap the second it opened up. The gap was deliberately left there from the bend by Jim Crowley, just enough to tempt, as I said, Rab Haviland to go for it. And it's only when he's gone for it that the gap has closed. And it hasn't naturally closed. This isn't, sometimes horses roll off the rail briefly and the jockey corrects them and they go back again. And so you do have that scenario where a gap briefly appears, but it's not going to stay there because horses are rolling around. And in a tight finish, as we saw with the Eclipse as well, with horses rolling around a little bit at the finish there, a gap is there for a fraction of a second, but you can't simply go for it because you know that you'll be barging someone out of the way. Here, that gap was open for a long, long time. And for the stewards on the day to say that the gap wasn't there seemed a bizarre thing to say, because the head-on seemed to suggest it was there. The scout camera that we saw yesterday seemed to suggest it was there. And again, it wasn't momentary. So it was an absolutely bizarre decision. It was the right decision to not wait for an appeal to correct that. But at the same time, what the PHA have done now is they have said, right, we've looked at this again. We've had a thorough review of the situation, and that was the wrong decision. So Rab Haviland has his ban rescinded. And that's the end of the matter. That's the problem now, is the PHA saying, right, everyone can stop moaning about it. We've done the right thing. Everyone's happy. Well, you've had a jockey almost put through the rails here, and the end result is no one was at fault. And again, we're still going down this path that you have potentially dangerous riding, reckless riding, willfully, you know, very good jockeys deliberately impeding other jockeys in races, knowing that they're going to get away with it. And we've got a situation here which has now been whitewashed, because Rab Haviland's not at fault, and Jim Crowley is officially not at fault either. And we know damn well that someone's at fault there, don't we?
Well, according to the article I read, the BHA have reminded Mr. Crowley of his responsibilities.
Again, that's perfect. He didn't win the race in the end because, as I said, he misjudged that. You don't want a scenario where you have to start getting a barging match. You want to open the door briefly, just when the other jockey decides he might try to go for it, then you want to close it again so that he's half committed, needs to change his mind, needs to come around, gets himself in a bit of turmoil mentally. Here, he's as I said, misjudged that badly and ended up having to close the door very hard. The one thing that I was looking forward to at an appeal is we would again have this idea of what constitutes improper riding or what constitutes dangerous riding. And there are three categories now. There's careless riding, improper riding, and dangerous riding. No one gets done for dangerous riding. No one's got done for 20 years for dangerous riding in the UK. And the last time someone got done for dangerous riding, a horse was killed. And that's basically where we are. Somebody or something needs to die before anyone will be done for dangerous riding. And improper riding, pretty much impossible to find as well. And yet, you know, you can watch a video montage that Kevin Blake has put together, for example, to see some really hairy looking scenarios where jockeys know exactly what they're doing. And to just keep saying this is careless and handing out 3 and 4 day bans. And of course, top jockeys don't mind picking up the occasional 3 or 4 day ban because you can't ride 360 days a year. You do need the occasional holiday. And if you happen to get one for winning a big race, well, you might find someone playing for your upgrade on your flight out to the Bahamas or wherever it happens to be. You know, that's not meant to happen, but you know, it's easy to be cynical about that these little holidays occasionally work for everybody. So we really need to examine both the rules and the guidelines in the UK, particularly. It's bad in Ireland as well. But the way the guidelines are written for the stewards here, I think is dreadful. It's basically color by numbers. You need to have stewards who know what they're doing, and you have to trust them to be able to look at a situation and come to the right conclusion, rather than giving them a step-by-step guide. It's like asking blind men to do the job the way it stands at the moment. There are some very specific guidelines that for me make no sense. They're almost pushing you absolutely into a certain scenario, whereas you need to be able to have the not the common sense. We talk about common sense an awful lot. You need to be able to make a judgment based on knowledge and experience and an ability to read a race and to understand what jockeys should be doing, and also to understand, you know, what their mentality is in terms of winning races. You know, this is not all, you know, bumper cars and accidental goings on. This is a sport worth a hell of a lot of money, where a jockey who rides absolutely to the rules will find his career over in 2 years, because no one's going to put a jockey up who's going to deliberately, you know, avoid interference, correct their horse the second it starts to hang. You don't do it because you lose races doing it. But at the same time, you have to make the punishment severe enough that it stops the incidents from happening.
Yeah. Well, look, watch the space, whether anything happens outside of whether the BHA or even the Irish regulators decide to kind of change up how the stewarding is done. We'll find out. I was going to talk about Gosling and Torrey. Tell you what, we'll move that to tomorrow, because that was a good long chat about, about the current state of stewarding in the UK after that big decision. We'll talk about Frankie and Gosling in tomorrow's pod. Let's get a few winners on day one at Newmarket. We'll start with the 150, which is the Bahrain Trophy. This race, 1 mile 5 furlongs. A bit of a unique trip for the three-year-old. So again, you're looking at potential St. Ledger horses here. 7-4 at the time of recording. Massa Kayla, who was, of course, career best fourth in the Derby. Walk of Stars, who officially, well, not officially, he was, I don't know, 60 lengths behind Walk of Stars at Epsom. Whether that was his true running, I think most people would assume, certainly the Paddy Barrett traders think not. 4-1, Zechariah Ryan Moore for Freddie and Martin Mead. A 15-2, Al Kareem. That one drifting slightly for Carl Burke. 8-1, Dovia Legend. Green team is 20s in the outsider. All right, Rory, I suppose the Derby form tested a couple of times so far. Change of the guard, would you say, has certainly proved it to be fairly decent. Pisbadil, maybe. So is Massa Kayla going to win then?
Westover didn't do the form of the Derby arm either, has to be said. The race is looking better now than it did at the time. The two who ran in the Derby are maybe the two most interesting horses in this race. I have very differing views of them. I must say I liked Massa Kayla a lot last year, and I thought he turned out, you know, he was the kind of horse I might have thrown a couple of quid each way at Andy Post for the Derby at a biggish price. And he ended up running very well in the Derby, finishing fourth. I don't think he had to improve an awful lot to do that. And I think you watch that race back, there's never a moment where he looks like he might finish any closer than fourth. And the horses who finished immediately behind him did an awful lot more running than him. I thought he was about the 10th best horse in the Derby on the day. I liked him last season. His form, you know, he was only just beaten by Native Trail at this meeting last year, for example. So, you know, his two-year-old form stands up very well. He had to be withdrawn from the Dante because he got very buzzed up and wouldn't go in the stalls. And he is quite a nervy sort. I wasn't sure he would stay a mile and a half. He ended up looking like he stayed it very well because he was running through horses at the end. But you've got to bear in mind the changing of the guard and Stone Age in particular, who were in the next two places in the Derby. They pressed on. They tried to make a race of it, try to make it a test of stamina, and they probably paid the price for that, changing of the guard in particular. And I thought Massa Kayla was picking up the pieces later on. Now, that still makes him, on paper, arguably the one to beat in the race, but I wasn't absolutely convinced by his stamina. I thought he was ridden to pick up a place at best, and he was well ridden to do that. You ask a horse to be competitive in a race like that, and you often see a different result. So I want to be against Massa Kayla here if he's favourite for the race. The most talented horse in the race for me is definitely Walk of Stars. And he did, he maybe should have won the Lingfield Derby trial, but that's working out all right anyway. He was a little bit wayward in the latter stages, probably got out battled there. And then he's just run no race at all at Epsom. But we've seen plenty of horses run really badly at Epsom and bounce back from it. He's been gelded since that run as well. He's got a similar sort of profile to Ybir in that, you know, it looks like he looked very, very good earlier in the season. Temperament looked to be a slight issue at Lingfield, and then he blew out completely at Epsom. And Ybir was a horse who never really got his act together last year until Aldrin. I think they gelded him after this. But he got back in track here, having looked like he was beginning to lose his way, and then turned out to be one of the best horses in the world at a mile and a half. So whether Walker Stars is able to transform himself in the same way, I don't know. But in terms of absolute talent, I think he's the best horse in the race. He was the pick of the paddock at Epsom, according to a couple of very good paddock judges. And if you ignore that, he's got a very big chance. The question for me is whether he's the type to bounce straight back from Epsom, whether Epsom might have left a big mark on him mentally. Mm-hmm. I think that has to be a possibility. So I could see him doing one of two things. I could see him, if something wins this by five lengths, it'll be Walk of Stars. But I could also see Walk of Stars blowing out again as he did at Epsom last time out, which makes it a little bit tricky. He's got the beating of Zechariah on Lingfield's Derby trial form, but Zechariah, we know he's very reliable, and he ran an absolute cracker to be second in the Queen's Vase over a furlong further than this. And of course, he would have won at a mile and five because he was only done right on the line by Eldarov. So he looks pretty solid, Zechariah. And he's, of the three market leaders, I think he's the one most likely to run his race. So he makes a degree of appeal for that reason. I would also throw in Al Karim, who was behind Zechariah at Ascot, but he made a lot of the running in the Queen's Vase, went a little bit too hard, but still did well to hang on for fourth. On paper, that wasn't really an improvement on his handicap win at York before that. But I liked the way he went about it. I thought he was the kind of horse who would put up a bigger performance at some stage. He's probably not quite good enough to win this, but I could see, as I said, I could see two of the market leaders running below form. And I'd be inclined to include Al Karim in forecasts, maybe with Walk of Stars to win, Al Karim to be second, Zechariah to win and Al Karim to be second. It's not a race you could be hugely confident about because Walk of Stars is impossible to weigh up, given what he did last time. Now, punters tend to make a decision one way or the other. They tend to go, oh, well, that's gone. That's gone out of the game after winning the Derby. Can't touch that with a barge pole. Or others will go, I'm ignoring Epsom and he's an absolute certainty if you ignore that. In reality, you're guessing to a degree whether Epsom's a write-off or whether Epsom's a sign that he's maybe going the wrong way temperamentally. Either way, I think including Al Karim in forecasts helps to boost your returns. You end up going smaller stakes as a result, I think. And you go with what you fancy there. I think Zechariah is the safest if you want to have a win only bet. Yeah. He's slightly overpriced compared to Walker Stars and Masakela based on their overall profiles, and he's definitely going the right way as he showed at Ascot last time out. And I think time will tell that Eldar Elsrov, who beat him at Ascot, is a very good horse indeed.
Tell you what, they made an absolute bean over decision moving the Queen's Vase back to a mile and three quarters, because we're talking about Queen's Vase versus Derby form here, and the way you're talking, there's not a huge amount between it. We would have said that back when it was a two miler. Right, that's a cracking little opener for us on ITV, the Bahrain Trophy, the 150 on the card. I got feedback from one of the lads somewhere. I said, would you stop mentioning the race titles? Give the time, for God's sake, PK. All right, the 150 at Newmarket, and the 225. Thanks for that, Spud, by the way. 225 is the July stakes. This is the big 2 year race on the first day, and it's a Group Two over six furlongs. On this, if you're playing on Paddy Power Online, is a big money back race, money back of your second, third or fourth, which is a really solid offer when you look at the makeup of this race. As we speak, Little Big Bear is the 6-4 favourite, 13-8 Persian Force, so almost nothing between the big two. Two big runs at Royal Ascot, one winning, the other finishing second. Then 6-1 for Appleby and Buick's Mysterious Knight, who goes up from Maiden Company. 7-1 Brave Nation for Michael Bell, and another cracker at Royal Ascot, awaiting on light amongst those at double figure odds, including Michael O'Callaghan's Harry Time, who's 20-1. Okay, so Rory, Coventry form versus the form of Little Big Bear's win, the Norfolk, wasn't it? The Windsor Castle. It was Windsor Castle.
Yeah,
these 22-year races. He was smashed up Little Big Bear in the betting. It does appear as though Coolmore thought, right, we have a proper two-year-old here. He won well.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways of looking at that. He did win that very well. I was inclined to be against him because if you're going for the Windsor Castle, you're not, and you've got a 30 or 40 really well-bred two-year-olds. You don't tend to take your best ones to the Windsor Castle. It's only a listed race. there are several better races at Royal Ascot than that. But it seems that they might have been going to the Windsor Castle for a bit of a punt. He was very, very, very well backed late on. And I think a few bets were landed there. So maybe that was just a case of, we know we think he can win the Coventry, but we know we can win the Windsor Castle, and we'd like to make that pay. Again, the bottom line here is the Coventry is a much better race than the Windsor Castle. And although Persian Force was beaten in the Coventry, he didn't do an awful lot wrong. Bradsell's a very good horse who won that race. He won by a mile on his debut at York, won by 9 lengths, pulling a cart in a perfectly good race. And it was just the case of, you know, people don't always trust York form going into Ascot, but Bradsell backed it up really well. So no, absolutely no shame in Persian Force finishing second there. On paper, that's a marginally better performance than Little Big Bear's win in the Windsor Castle. It may well be that Little Big Bear will improve a chunk for coming back up to 6 furlongs. You know, if you think they were running him in the Windsor Castle because it was a case of getting weaker opposition and landing the money, and they always thought he was a 6 furlong horse, you know, on pedigree, he should stay 6 furlong at least as well as 5. There's a lot of stamina on his dam side. So Little Big Bear he's the one who might progress a chunk, even though he's had the 3 runs, whereas Persian Force, we pretty much know where we stand with him. He'll probably find a little bit of improvement. And I think that makes Little Big Bear the favourite in most people's minds. I'm still inclined to think, I still trust Coventry form slightly better than I trust the 5 furlong form at Ascot. We tend to automatically assume, because it's Royal Ascot, everything's hugely competitive. But by definition, the Group 2 races are a little bit more competitive than the listed races. And I'll give Persian Force a little bit more credit for finishing second to the best 6 1 and 2 year old in Europe at the moment. And he would just be my pick. But, you know, you're looking at maybe 13-8, 7-4 each of 2 at best there. So there's not a huge amount of juice to be had. And I reckon if you did a Vox Pop here, you'd find that half the population would come down for 1.5 for the other with their own arguments. So there's not a huge amount between the pair. As I said, just as a rule, favor the Coventry form. You know, I think it's essentially a de facto Group 1 in that there's no Group 1 for 2 year olds at Royal Ascot, but the Coventry is always the race for the best horses as a rule. Aidan O'Brien's kind of turned that in his head in recent years by running very, very good horses in the Chesham. And maybe he's going the same way now with the Windsor Castle as well. You know, it's Royal Ascot. A winner's a winner there. And you could just use it as a springboard for the rest of the summer. So he may have blindsided me a little bit there with little Big Bear. But Persian Force just gets the nod.
Yeah, he was we go back to the press day, the first, just before the season got underway, around the time down at Ballydoyle, Aidan had everyone down, and there was a few videos that went on when Aidan put up one 2 year old, didn't know the name of it, as per usual. What's that? Yeah. What's that? No name. Is it No Name Ever? Is it? No
it
name?
Is. Yeah.
Yeah. So that No Name Ever, little, and then whoever it was, I don't know who it was, it wasn't Pat Keating, but someone beside him, Little Big Bear, Aidan. Oh yeah, Little Big Bear, that'll win. And of course, beaten on debut, but it turned out he was probably right.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Let's move on. 6 places we're offering online for the 3 o'clock. The 6 furlong handicap due off at 3 p.m. at Newmarket. 3 o'clock race. There's already been a bit of a move for Jim Crowley and William Haggis as Kanjar. Is this yet another William Haggis improving handicapper who we could see in group races soon? 4-1 from 11-2. Didn't take long after the prices were revealed on Tuesday morning for this race. Deodar for Ryan Moore and Rafe Beckett. I'm not sure if Rob Hornby is, he's not riding in Newmarket, but he used to ride this horse in the Judmont colours. He's not riding this one again. Poor old Rob. Ryan Moore takes over for Rafe Beckett, 13-2. And Rob Hornby also used to ride Ingra Tour for Mick Shannon. And that's 8-1. Maybe Rob, he's riding elsewhere. It's very busy at the time. Le Beau Garçon, 8-1, 10-1, Witch Hunter, and Bosch. That's also 10-1 for a few others. All right, Rory, this is your meet and drink, 6 furlong sprint handicap at the July meeting.
Yeah, the 3 year olds, though. Three-year-old handicaps are always difficult because, again, you've got Kanjar, who's had one handicap run and one by 3 lengths, despite just missing the break slightly at Ribbon from the outside stall. So he could, you know, there could be a big chunk of improvement in him, even though he's gone up £9 for winning that. And these are harder races to read because I like it when all the form's on the table and nothing's nothing's going to improve a massive chunk, but you're just looking for the horse that gets the ideal conditions and is you know, ready to hit form. You have to respect Kanchar. I thought there would be value, a little bit of value in two horses here at bigger prices. The horse that Kanchar beat last time out, by definition, punters always look to rule horses out as quickly as they can. And if you've been beaten by the favorite on your most recent start, well, that's it. That's one horse I can rule out. He can't beat it because he was beaten last time. And Azura Blue, who's an El Kabir filly, she won very well at Hamilton about a month ago and then was favourite to beat Kanchar last time out at Ripon. Could only finish second that day, beaten three lengths, but just watching the replay back again, I thought Paul Mulrennan was very easy on her when she was beaten. She had to make her own running for most of the journey there. Kanchar pounced on her with a furlong to go and was clearly going best. And when Mulrennan realised there was no point beating her up, he's let her come home in her own time. She's ended up being beaten three lengths and was half a length ahead of the third horse. I thought she could easily have been two lengths ahead of that horse, Bond Power. Kanchar probably would have found more if she sort of stuck to him and asked another question. But I think she's better than a half length beating off Bond Power is would suggest on paper. And because, as I said, she's not a sexy horse here. She was beaten by the favourite last time out. She is better off with the weight. She's gone up £2 for that. But any horse beaten three lengths, I think punters immediately think, right, well, the handicapper's got you now, which may be true. But, you know, she's won twice in her last four starts. She won her maiden at Newcastle in good style. And as I said, she won by a wide margin at Hamilton, looking well in off her with a penalty. You can always argue when a horse is beaten under penalty, trainers turn them out because they've got to, knowing the handicap is going to put them up more than they've been raised by. And she's now gone up the extra £2. So that might have come quick enough for her, but it's still a fair run. It wasn't quite as good as the Hamilton run looks on paper. But her previous run at York, when she was fifth, is also a useful piece of form. That was in a race won by Showtime Mahomes, where she was drawn away from the winner that day. The second, third, fifth, ninth, 14th, all won handicaps on their next start. Really, really hot piece of form.
That's an excellent back kicking impression, by the way.
Thank you.
Very, very good. The second or third, though.
I praise.
It is. And Frank will be back soon, by the way.
I like these races that work out. Now, the interesting thing, I think people won't be aware of how hot that form is because the winner was fancied over the same course and distance six time out and bombed out badly, who runs in this race as well, Showtime Mahomes. But I thought that was solid form. Latin Lover was third, who went on to win at Royal Ascot. So it's really, really strong form. She was a little bit unlucky with the way that panned out. Showed that she was ahead of her mark with that win at Hamilton. And I still think she's reasonably handicapped. I wouldn't say she's ahead of her mark, but I think she's going to go off at 25 to 1 here. She's 20s at the moment, but she's the kind of horse who's not going to garner much interest in the market. So I think she'll drift to a decent price. She comes from last year's winning yard as well, Michael Dodds. And I think she'll run a solid race. She'll certainly be happier going back into a big field. She's got several good runs in biggish fields. As I said, she had to make her own running last time at Ripon because nothing could live with her from halfway. And then she got mugged later on. I think she would have been happier chasing something at a stronger pace there. So she's one of two that I'm with here. And I have backed the rank outsider in the race who's overpriced.
6-1.
66 to 1 about Lil Guff. I don't know what price she is with.
Did you get 66?
I backed her at 50s with Paddy.
Okay, yeah, 50s she was. She's half.
But she was 66 then with another firm this morning, so okay. I've topped up at that.
Oh, good man. So I see here, just looking at the Paddy Power website, 50 and then cut into 28 to 1. So I might have to check the field book and see how much that bet was.
I can tell you what it was, but I'm not sure you want to know.
All right.
She's, again, you know, the handicappers had her stay with her to a degree, but she's a progressive sprinting filly who shouldn't be the rank outsider here. She won at Haydock in May in a big field. She then followed up with a 6-pound higher mark at Yarmouth. Didn't win that by the same sort of margin, but it was a good performance. She was then only beaten two lengths at Royal Ascot despite being drawn on the wrong side. That was in the Palace of Holyrood House handicap. She was... the four who dominated were all drawn very high, or four three of the first four worlds went very high, and she was drawn very low. So she did pretty well to finish within two lengths of the winner there, even though she's only ninth. And then she's run what appears a poor race at Newbury last time by finishing fifth of six. But again, she's beaten a length and a half, just over. That race did not pan out for her at all. She was held up in last place, and they went slow. And then they quickened from a furlong out. And although she quickened, the nature of the race meant they weren't coming back to her. And she was just able to close up gradually. She's also got slightly hampered about a furlong out. When she's, rather than coming down the wing, she's ended up sort of cutting inside another runner, which hasn't helped her. That's not a brilliant run, but it's nowhere near bad enough for you to put a line through her. And she would have been a lot happier with a strong pace to run at. Also worth pointing out, her Ascot run was back at five furlongs, which is too short for her. So she's actually done really well, again, getting within two lengths of the winner, while running at a trip that's a little bit short of her best. Back in a scenario where they're going to go hard, there are eight horses here who might make the running. She's going to be held up rear of midfield, and she'll be running through horses at the end. For that reason, I think she's the ideal type to back extra places at a big price. So I've done that.
Okay.
Taken a range of strange prices about her.
Lovely. Okay, so Lil Guff, just to reiterate, Lil Guff, number 13 in the 3 o'clock, folks. That's the 3 o'clock Newmarket. Lil Guff, and also Azure Blue each way, pokes at massive prices, but the 50s is gone, the 28s. Will that last? We'll find out by the time you turn on.
I mean, she's not going to be like a 12 to 1 shot. Yeah. I mean, she has to be a relative outsider, but not not rank outsider, not 50, 66 to 1, I don't think.
They're on the 50s and the 66s anyway. Right, must remember to check that field book. Right, the marked account. 335 is the final event from Newmarket we're going to look at on Thursday, the Princess of Wales Stakes, mile and a half group two. And it looks a match, but it's an interesting match, or is it? Mostadaf for John and Thady Goss and Jim Crowley, second behind a couple of very good horses, the last couple of starts, including Broom, is the 11-8 favourite. 6-4, Yabir, who we've already touched on, won in this card last year in the Bahrain Trophy, is 6-4, but has he lost his way? 8-1, Living Legend, who the conditions of the race don't really suit. He's actually giving weight away. West End Charmers, 10s, 14-1 Global Storm, a new mandate for Frankie and Beckett, 16-1. Right, I kind of teed it up as a potential match, Rory. Is that how you look at it?
Well, yeah, there are two horses who are well clear on the ratings here. Living Legend, who you mentioned, has to give £3 away because he beat Yabir here in the Jockey Club Stakes earlier in the season. Yabir was 1-4 that day, and that's part of the story of the race. He looked a bit of a good thing, having improved out of all recognition in the second half of last season. Obviously, won at this meeting last year in the Bahrain Trophy, and then he's won the Breeders' Cup Turf in great style, and was very, very unlucky from a bad draw in the Shima Classic at Maidan in March. He was disappointing, you have to say. He was going on at the finish when second. But he made very, very hard work of it. There was no hint of being unlucky. Yes, the winner was able to dictate a slower pace than ideal, a Living Legend. But in fairness, Living Legend ended up getting in a fight with another runner in that race. And Yabir should have had things set up ideally for him. You can forgive that as a one-off, but he went to Belmont there and ran in the Man of War Stakes, which is not a particularly strong race these days. And was beaten by a horse that you'll remember well, Highland Chief. He was a winner of a handicap at Royal Ascot a couple of seasons ago before being moved by his owners to Graham Motion in the States.
Fitri Hay.
Fitri Hay. Still runs in Fitri Hay's colours. So he won the Man of War, and Yabir stood in the stalls for about 3 seconds after the start. And you have to ask, after his, making very, very hard work of that that race at Newmarket, and then standing still, he's caught them as well on the bend. And I thought again he would come past, but he's been very laboured in the finish. And it's easy enough to say, well, if he got away on terms, he would have won, because he's lost 10 lengths and he's been beaten a length and a quarter. But it was an ugly looking performance. It seemed to me to be reluctance in the early stages. He then raced sweetly enough in the middle part of the race. I thought he looked a little bit reluctant to exert himself later on again, although you have to give some allowance for the fact that he did a lot of running to get involved there. But I'd be worried about his temperament again. He looked last year. I did joke with a friend, they might want to geld him again. Gelding worked really well for him last season. They might They might want to see if they can do that twice. Because he does
become a filly. He's had a filly's races.
He was transformed by gelding last year. He ran a stinker, I think, in the Voltigeur, and then came out and looked unbeatable after that. But his two most recent runs have raised questions again about whether his heart is in it. As I said, the Maidan run was a huge one, possibly a lifetime best, because he was drawn on the outside of the field, had to do a huge amount of running to get involved there. Maybe it soured him a little bit, I don't know. He could bounce back. He's in exceptionally good hands, and he's been given a break since the Man of War in May. But if he's going to do what he did last time or the time before, then he's opening the door to Mostadaf. And the presence of Ubeer in there means that Mostadaf, who ran an absolute cracker, I thought, to be second to Broome. And we have to say that Broome was given one of the best rides of the week. I think the plaudits for Ride of the Week had gone out before Saturday came around, but Ryan Moore was absolutely superb on Broome. And Mostadaf did well to get close to him, given how that race panned out. That was a very good performance. He should have won at Sandown on his previous start. He shouldn't have won at Sandown. He was already running the Bay Bridge. But he should have... He'd almost come here with a flawless record, but for running into a couple of either superstars or Ryan Moore riding at his very best, or a combination of both. So while he's not quite the superstar that one or two in these colours are at the moment, he might find that this race just falls into his lap if Ubeer doesn't fancy it. And having a look at those recent runs of Ubeer's, again, this is a decision punters have to make. You either say, well, Ubeer bounced back from a couple of poor runs to win at this meeting last year. Charlie Appleby knows what he's doing. He'll do that again. Or you say, this Ubeer, there's only so long they can do that before they go completely doggy. And he looks like he's going that way, so I want to avoid him. And then you end up with Mostadaf by default.
If I know punters, the games, he's gone. It's definitely more, we'll give him another chance. There's definitely, yeah. You're definitely quicker to go, gone. Particularly if you backed him that time he was beaten. It's gone at the game.
But it's always absolute, though, isn't it? The bottom line is, there's no gray here. We don't know. And therefore you've got to go, right, so what's the percentage call then, given I don't know? But that, you know, the percentage call is, it's 6-4. It's a 6-4 shot. He would be a shade of odds on if he wasn't gone. And he'd be 10-1 if he was, but he's probably going to give us, essentially, being sensible about it, you go, I can't get involved in this race.
When you don't know
where you stand with a horse like him, it's difficult to get involved. But punters, as a rule, particularly with horses they know well, they will always make a decision and say, right, I'm going to decide whether he's gone or whether he's great value and punt accordingly.
Yeah, particularly if you think that, like, in your heart, I think Ubeer is gone. Like, well, gone. I think he's still a good horse, but I do think that he's not the horse, i.e. he was or was threatening to be. So I, in the back of my head, am thinking, right, I want to take him on. But then I'm going, but he could come back just for those reasons. He said, and Charlie Appleby and Bue. So it's almost the fear of not backing up my own opinion is kind of, well, I'm going to have to back Mostadaf now, but I'm definitely going to go, maybe I could do Mostadaf, Ubeer forecast or whatever. And if I don't, and then of course that happens, it's that fear of going, I can't bloody believe it. But anyway.
You almost certainly don't want to have a reverse forecast the first two in the market there. That's the ultimate cop-out.
Definitely not. No,
but again, if you do think a horse is either going to bolt up or be a blowout, then opposing him, you're probably better off not simply backing the horse you fancy to beat him, but back that horse to beat another horse who you think will be second best on the day. You're multiplying the value where you think you find the value. And it's always important. You know, bookmakers make their money by, you know, multiplying their value across multiple bets. You know, having worked in the industry for a long time, you'd much rather see people doing Yankees than having win singles.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a small profit margin, that margin gets multiplied when people do multiple bets. If you're getting an angle, then you also want to multiply that angle as well to increase the degree of value you're getting. So if you're convinced Ubeer is going to run a bad race, then backing Mostadaf on his own isn't enough for you. You want to be backing Mostadaf to beat New Mandate, or maybe Mostadaf to beat Living Legend. Because that's increasing, you know, the angle that you believe that you have. You might be wrong, but at least you're chiseling it out in a way that makes sense.
I like it. All right. That is almost all the ITV action covered. There is, ITV decided to bring us to Carlisle for a Phillies handicap. Now, this is a relatively low race. It's a class four race for 3 years and upwards, not 85. And I said, Rory, look, it's on ITV. Come on, will we talk about it? And then we were about to start. I said, do you have it for that? Like, don't worry about it if you don't. Like, the good racing. And you said, oh, I do. Oh, I do. You were quite keen on one.
Yeah, I do quite like. I think Lady Lades will have this race run to suit her. She's been running consistently well, but you could argue from her form figures, she's roughly where the handicapper wants her. She's been beaten off 75, 75, and 74 on her last three starts, made the places each time, but not gone especially close to winning. But I think Carlisle will suit her very well. She's got good form at Beverley. She won her maiden at Beverley. She ran her best race as a two-year-old at Beverley as well. She's also dropping back marginally in trip. She's been running over a stiff six at Hamilton on three of her last four starts. At Carlisle, it's a stiff finish as well, but the 6 furlongs isn't a full 6 furlongs. It's 5 furlongs, 180 yards. And I think, given that both her wins have come at 5 furlongs, I think she'll be suited by that. She's a course winner as well as a juvenile. So the track does suit her. She's also got a very good draw. And again, it's important to point out why you think a draw is a good draw. We tend to go low draw good, high draw bad. Carlisle doesn't tend to be the case. You don't necessarily want to be drawn next to the rail at Carlisle. The far rail is never the fastest ground on the track. Sometimes they want to come across all the way to the near side rail when the ground is on the soft side. Don't think it's going to be soft. I think it's going to be good to firm ground for this meeting. So they will come across. But horses who get a prominent position and can race a few horses off the rail tend to do better than those who are bang on the rail. So I'm never that keen to back horses drawn one or two around here. But Lady Lade has got plenty of speed early. She's made the running in her last three starts. She's in stall five. So I think she gets clear of those who are on her inside, although there is pace on her inside, but she's not desperate to get to the rail. She'll want to stay a little bit out. That will suit her. And I just think fast ground, 5.5 furlongs, the ideal draw to attack from, it might just add up to everything falling her way, which she probably needs off her handicap mark. But that's true of pretty much all this field, except obviously there's a William Haggis filly in the race. He's only had the 3 runs. He seems to have an endless supply of them. You frame a handicap and William Haggis will come in at the last minute with a horse who's only had 3 runs and could be a stone ahead of her mark. So Rosina clearly could be a bit of a punt here. She's drawn a stall 11. Which is fine when the ground is soft. I think it's maybe a little bit higher than ideal here. I'd rather be drawn in the middle. And if you've got the pace, then you know if there is a faster strip, stand side, you can move across to that. If there isn't, you can stay where you are. If you're drawn a sort of 11, you're just being pushed a little bit wider by other horses around the first bend. But she could be the blot on this handicap, Rosina. But I think that Lady Lade will run her race. The form book suggests she'll be there or thereabouts anyway. And I think it might just click for her with conditions perfectly in her favour.
That's a 2:45, Carlisle. Apologies if I forgot the race title. Lady Lade, number 10 on the card. Watch out for Rosina. Rosina beaten favourite last two starts at short prices. So maybe she is one to oppose again. Right, that is a wonderful Thursday racing, including that Carlisle race. You're not going to nap up, Lady Lade. I know you're tempted to for your Thursday picks, but maybe you are. Go on, what's the nap?
It is tempting, I have to say.
He's gone, folks.
With the extra places, you're in 6 places in the handicap. I might go with little Guff to fall into one of those places. I expect 2 or 3 to have gone beyond recall by the time she gets through. But I think the nature of the race and the extra places suit a filly like her who'd be doing her best work at the finish. So at a big price, she'll do as my nap for the day.
No Guff from us, little Guff in the big sprint handicap, which is, to reiterate, due off at 3 o'clock, the 3 o'clock at Newmarket, Little Guff. Watch out for that one, the nappy joy. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll look ahead to Friday's racing at the Newmarket Stage 2 of the July meeting. Don't forget, you can get a free bet, retweet, quote tweet, I should say, any of the tweets regarding this show, particularly any of these that you see, and you will get yourself into the draw for a free bet. Happy days. Until tomorrow, stay safe, stay well, stay lucky, and we'll be back, and hopefully your beer will have finished third. Talk to you tomorrow.